Each Wednesday, we feature someone from the local peace community. Today, we're talking with Pete Looker.
So I've actually known Pete for a number of years. I always say he's my chimney sweep. And I remember one of those prior depressing moments in our political history. I believe it was the second Bush president being inaugurated. He gave me a little button, said, "Choose peace," which I wore for quite a few years. But Pete is also a longtime activist. He has worked against imperialist wars since awakening in college in 1968. He did draft counseling and was involved with the big peace student strike of 1970. He's also been engaged in the various Latin American and Middle Eastern American invasions, I believe protesting that. And now he is concentrated more on the ecocidal war on the earth. So, Pete, what makes you a peace activist?
I guess I was brought up in everything from church and family to in family, we couldn't punch each other, we could wrestle. And in church, I was told not to hurt people. So I just kind of, and then the Vietnam War in college kind of reawakened me to what our government was doing.
And what do you choose to do? What kind of strategies do you use?
Whatever's available. My wife's a singer, so she can use her voice to sing and grab people's heart and soul to get off their ass and do something. Me, I can stand there. I can hold signs. I can open doors. I can sit down and be arrested. Those kinds of things.
So you mentioned you were involved in participated and possibly organized in the big peace student strike of 1970. Probably many of our listeners have forgotten that particular student strike. And of course, we are seeing most recently a new wave of student activism, unfortunately this time focused in response to various massacres at schools across our country. But, you know, maybe can you talk a little bit about what that was like during the Vietnam War in terms of the students mobilizing and, you know, also the draft counseling you were doing?
Well, I guess because we were our age group was being drafted, and those of us that were in college had the option to avoid having to deal with that for 4 years or 2 years. And so I was awakened to the, and you saw pictures of what we were doing in Southeast Asia and Vietnam, and just said that was wrong. So we would go downtown and picket. We would write letters. We would picket at the university. And then in 1970, there was a sort of a nationwide college strike, probably similar but more organized maybe than this one the students are doing today. We basically stopped going to colleges, and the colleges, a lot of them shut down for the last, I don't know, it was a week or two, and just decided, hey, we're not going to do this anymore.
Well, I tend to be quite a pessimist, and so I think I have to ask you flat out, what do you see our future? Are we fried?
There's a high possibility of that. I like David Orr, is I think an Oberlin professor. He talked about the difference between hope and optimism. He talked about optimism is like I'm playing cards and I got dealt a full house and I'm probably going to win the game. Hope is more like a verb, like I got dealt a 2, 4, 6, 7 jack of four different suits. I'm going to give it my best shot and do what I can do. And so I think we're in a situation closer to the 2, 4, 6, 7 jack than we are in the full house in terms of avoiding major problems.
Now, I should disclose that both Pete and I have been involved on and off with the Green Party, and I always said probably the most radical position that the Green Party takes as one of its four core values is a commitment to nonviolence, and often run into disagreements with some lefties who feel that we should always support any armed rebellion by people who are being oppressed, regardless of whether or not they're targeting, you know, combatants or civilians. But You know, what are some of your thoughts about the effectiveness of a nonviolent approach to revolution versus, violent revolutionary activity?
I minored in peace studies undergraduate, and all the majority of the information that I'm aware of that seems to make sense is that nonviolent revolutions long-term are much more effective than violent revolutions. Violent revolutions tend to breed more violence. Nonviolent revolutions tend to create a more peaceful world. So that's my take on it. I'm no genius, but it seems to be more effective than the things I've read.
And could you give us some pointers on why and how we can do our part? How do we keep this movement going?
I guess do a variety of things. For me, it's like it's not either or. You know, like it's not like there's this perfect thing. You know, if you can run a radio station, do a radio show. If you can sing a song, that grabs people's soul. If you can stand there and hold a sign, If you can put all the people that are supposed to represent us in your phone number, in your phone book, and then call them periodically and remind them about this or that. If you can sit down in front of somebody's office and say, hey, I'm not going to leave until you work for peace. And, so you do whatever you can do. It's not, I don't think it's either or. It's all or nothing. We have to do all the variety of things we can do.
So everybody can do something.
Yes. And I think every day I kind of think, well, what more thing can I do today that'll bring a little more sane world?
Now, I know that one of the groups that you often spend your Saturdays with is the Saratoga Peace Alliance, which I believe stands out in front of the Federal Post Office in Saratoga Springs. Maybe you just give, you know, some little background about what the Saratoga Peace Alliance is or any of the other various peace groups you've been working with here in the Capital District.
Yeah, well, the Saratoga Peace Alliance is actually the third iteration of the Saratoga Peace Alliance. The first one was during the Vietnam War. The second one was with the first invasion or whatever on Iraq. And then we organized one 2002, I think it was, in Saratoga. And 100 people came together and decided, what are we going to do? And we did marches and we did vigils and we did wrote letters and called people. It's a smaller group right now. We basically show up at the corner. We were talking about, should we keep that going? Because there's only half a dozen people. And my feeling was if one person shows up, we should do it. The Dr. Spock, who was...
Benjamin Spock, I believe,
not the Star Trek one, the other one. He was going to speak at the Capitol on testifying to Capitol on children's health, I believe, and he saw these half a dozen crazy women out there standing in the cold rain, and he said, "My God, it must be something important." And they were protesting the Vietnam invasion and war, and that kind of got him interested. So you never know when you're standing there. Maybe you'll make a difference. You know, you give it your best shot.
So recently you become more involved with the movement on climate change. How does sort of the climate change movement relate or is an outgrowth of the peace movement?
A couple of ways. One, we're trying to bring about a more peaceful world, and you can look at all the refugees we're creating and all the wars we're having over energy, over oil, and then as climate catastrophe gets worse, we're going to have more and more people displaced and in a place, and we need to have a peaceful solution to that. And then, of course, the military, in this country, the military is the biggest user of carbon and the biggest destroyer of the ecosystem and the climate that we have, even bigger than food or transportation.
And we'd like to thank you, Pete, for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. Good luck and keep up, do the good work and have a good time.
You're welcome. That was Pete Looker. He was our guest tonight on our Peace segment. You can hear a Peace segment every Wednesday on WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine.